gritty. Freedom Train Radio taking over for the 18 and the 19. Yeah. Thank you for taking the ride on the Freedom Train Podcast Series. I'm your host, Joseph Ward, and as always, ride with me is my big homie, Mr. Patrick Irvin. And remember, the Freedom Train is brought to you by PAX Inc. That's PACTSINC. And PAX Inc. is a black development organization aimed at developing the black community to its maximum potential through a focus on education and economics with the traits of hard work, honesty, and integrity. For more information, make sure you visit www.pactsinc.org. That way you can learn more about the organization, its members, its mission, everything that it does in the community. You can definitely check out the Education Center. And if you like what you see and what you're learning from, you go ahead and donate to the organization. Once again, that's PAX Inc. at pactsinc.org. While you're online, make sure you visit our Freedom Train website at www.freedomtrainradio.com, which is the home base of the Freedom Train Network, where you can learn more about myself, you can learn more about Patrick, the Enigma September, Donnell Durden, everybody else who putting out shows on the Freedom Train Network, because it gets down and we got our diverse topics and all these different things here for the community, by the community. www.freedomtrainradio.com. And remember, go to the Google Play Store, type in Freedom Train Radio or Freedom Train Network, and we got our free app in the Google Play Store. It's for Android only. So we get into y'all iPhone people, but you know what I'm saying. Pat,
what up?
What it look like?
What it is and what it does and what it's going to do. For sure.
Oh, yeah. Man, bruh, I don't know about you, but I'm all electioned out. What about you?
I don't know what you're gonna do. I don't know what you're gonna do. I kinda clap my hands.
Yeah,
I'm definitely right there with you, bro. I'm definitely electioned out.
Because it's... What's interesting is, you know, the dynamics that come from this particular midterm election. Because first of all, I don't remember a midterm election growing up that garnered this much attention nationally.
Not
I don't remember that.
That record, man, all across the nation.
Because people showed up to this midterm and the celebrity endorsements and all these things, it was like it was a presidential election. So yeah, that was different. But then, you know, the dynamic of, like, you know, like we talked about our last show, having three black governor candidates running, Stacey Abrams, Andrew Gilliam, Ben Jealous representing Maryland, Stacey Abrams, Georgia, Andrew Gilliam, Florida. And then, like, within the specific states, the race between Bill Nelson and Rick Scott. And let me say this, them two ugly-ass white men, like, them two ugly white, like, Bill Nelson looked like Rick Scott with hair. So it's like if Skeletor fought the Grim Reaper, that's what them two look like. But, you know, I digress. And then, you know, all of the local elections that happened. So I'm here in Tallahassee. Patrick is in Charlotte. So we're going to tell you all about what happened with the local elections. But also, we want to touch on the HOTEPs versus the VOTEPs. And this is some new shit. I didn't make this up. So if you never heard of this, I just want to make the disclaimer. Joseph Ward did not make that shit up. Okay. So it's the people who vote against the people who don't vote. Even though the community is still losing at the end of the day. So I don't know. But overall, Pat, what were your overall thoughts and feelings of these midterm elections?
It was mixed, kind of like the election itself. On the one hand, I was happy people turned out to vote. On the other hand, I was disappointed that people seemed to be voting based off emotions,
right,
not off policy.
Right.
I was disappointed to see people basically just on this partisan divide kick.
That pissed me off.
So, and with regards to the black community, I was disappointed to see all of the things I mentioned before, but also the way we responded when, you know, things didn't necessarily go the way we wanted them to as individuals. So, you know, my overall impressions is mixed. You know, like I said, happy that record numbers of people went out to vote, but I'm upset at the way they voted, the ignorance in the voting, in the process, and the understanding of what happens, how government works. Yeah, so it's been a mixed bag for me.
I just want to give a round of applause and a shout out to all, especially in Florida, all of the fellas who got the vote. You know what I'm saying? I thought that was very, very, very cool to see the felons get their rights restored, because people, like you said, people showed up to vote, and them showing up to vote allowed 1.4 million people in the state of Florida to have their voting rights restored. Now the thing that gets me about these elections, and we've talked about it before, but like you said, people voting off of emotions, but even if your candidate won or didn't win, we still, there's no quid pro quo when we vote. And we got to get to that point where there's a quid pro quo. You can't just have our votes because you're black. You can't just have our votes just because you went to the same school as me. You can't just have our votes because you're a black woman. You can't just have our votes because you're LGBTQ or you liberal or whatever. Like, I want us to get past that point where we just give people votes. Because you know, the default is, if you are Democrat and the other is Republican, and I don't know shit about neither one of y'all because I didn't do my research, even though I had plenty of time to do my research, I'm going to just go with the Democrat because he's the lesser of the two evils. That mindset there is crazy. But I know here, you know, going into the recounts in the state of Florida, going into the recounts between Nelson and Rick Scott and Gillum and DeSantis, and then locally, certain people being put on the city commission, school board, district 3 position, our city commission, I think it was district 1, I believe. We had this gentleman named Bill Proctor, and I'm just glossing over right now, but a gentleman named Bill Proctor. Yeah, District 1, City Commission, District 1, gentleman named Bill Proctor, been in that seat for 20 years. Had a young lady challenging him named Jasmine Ali, a 20-year-old college student. And she did a very, very, very good job, but I'll go more into it than that. But even the thing with all these is, we still went into an election with all the momentum and energy as voters, but not as, like, people who gonna really get something out of this shit. You know what I'm saying? If that makes sense.
I mean, yeah, it makes perfect sense to me.
Cause I mean, like, we got 1.4 million people voting rights restored. So how many of those people vote? Well, you know, how can you harness those votes though? Cause that right there, that can swing an election. So how do you harness those votes? What's the organization? What's the plan in place? Are we going to start engaging in block voting, all these other things here? Are we going to create mechanisms to hold people accountable? Because, you know, everybody's excited that the Democrats have the House. But what does that mean for us, though? Like, really?
Yeah, we definitely got to start getting organized, you know, in the states where an entire new group of people just got their voting rights restored. You know, that is, especially if a good chunk of them are black, that, you know, provides a significant boost to the political power of the black Floridians' voter base. So, definitely getting those guys up to speed, getting them involved, getting them included in some sort of long-term plan, with block voting being the tactic or the strategy in that plan. But, you know, also, there's just so much that needs to be done surrounding politics. We need to start writing our own policy and forcing candidates to at least review it. You know, we need to start voting as a block. We need to start controlling the margins. We need to stop voting based off emotions and who connects better in terms of I grew up or like the, all of those things you said earlier, and just, again, who supports the types of policies that I agree with. You know, it's just a lot that needs to be done. Even if your candidate doesn't win, you know, like you alluded to earlier, you still got to figure out how to get what you need for your community. And that might mean you got to work with a Republican for those of you that are Democrats. And that might mean you got to work with a Democrat for those of you that are Republicans. So, you know, there's just a lot of education and a lot of work to be done in the regard of educating people about how politics works.
Nah, I agree. Like you said, block voting and things like that. Like I was telling you earlier here, a group of people, you know, kind of got together and shared ideas on who they would vote for, and you know, kind of went forward with that. But it was, to me, the timing of it was too late because it was, you know, days before the election, and it was after early voting had started. So with that particular process, I know myself, this is like a week or so after I voted. And so it was to create that block and to engage the politicians to see what we can get from them or see what their agendas are before we voted. Well, really, it wasn't even to see what we can get from them. It was to see what their agendas are and see what black people was in their agendas. But like I said, they gave the politicians gave generalized answers. And Tallahassee, you know, in Tallahassee, South Side is synonymous. Well, the South Side is the deflector away from black people. When people say, I raised money for the South Side of Tallahassee. Yes, the South Side is predominantly black, but it's not all black. And just because you raise money for the South Side doesn't mean it impacts the black community positively. You know, because it's like, you know, nationally, when people say Chicago, that means black people. But here locally, when people say South Side, that means, they usually mean like the greater South Side, but it don't always, because it's interchangeable. Sometimes it means black people, and sometimes it don't. But in this instance, it didn't mean black people. It meant just the side of town. But when you tell me, when somebody asks you a specific question of what are you going to do specifically for black people, and you tell me what you're going to do for a side of town, I'm looking at you like, okay, did you not understand my question? Right. You know what I'm saying? And it's like, another instance, I was scrolling through Facebook and somebody shared a post that Tariq Nasheed made about black politicians not having a specific black agenda. And they so I saw people commenting on it, and they were talking about, you know, how the black politicians don't have a specific black agenda now, especially like the governors. Because that's mainly what they was talking about, the governors. Because many, many people didn't know about the other black people who was running for the other positions, right? So one gentleman commented, well, it's different down here in Florida because Andrew Gilliam, and then he started listing off Andrew Gilliam's policies, which were general policies, which were not specific for black people. So even those who do have the spirit of voting, it's just like, I just feel like we're all over the place. I feel like we're an ant bed. Somebody poured water on the ant bed or stepped in the ant bed, and people just running all around everywhere, and we don't really know what we're doing, but we're just doing something because it's just making us feel good, and it's making us feel better than whatever, because that's the only thing we can do.
Well, you know what's interesting even about the idea you presented about the guys and the people down there that were trying to get together the whole block voting thing. Sometimes you have an idea, but it's not the right time to execute.
Right.
And a lot of situations, and that's one of my biggest fears too, is that, you know, we were so mobilized going into the election. You know, how is that going to translate going into the next election? I know Trump is a huge catalyst for a lot of this activity. But how does that energy carry forward, you know, after Trump? So, you know, even with that idea, that's something where, okay, well, maybe it didn't work out this time because you started too late. You had the idea too late. But now you got a whole 2 years to get it together. Are you going to wait until you get 2 months out to try to, you know, to try to execute it the next go around? Are you even?
I say start now. Try to. You start right now. It's time to start for me.
Right. I would agree. I definitely think it's because that's a continuous thing. That's not something that just pops up for the election and then whatever. No, that's the beginnings of a true black political caucus in Tallahassee and eventually in Florida. So as far as I know, we didn't have nothing like that here. We didn't have any major legislation like you had the you had the 1.4 million ex-cons get the right to vote. We didn't have nothing like that either. You know, we did have a $50 million block grant set aside for affordable housing. Unfortunately, that money oftentimes doesn't go to where it needs to go to in order to improve the housing options for low-income people. But people did pass that, but they had a, you know, they passed voter ID laws here, so now you'll need a voter ID, or you'll need an ID, a photo ID, in order to vote, which, you know, that was kind of sad. They passed a law for the, oh, one interesting thing here that did happen here is that the Democrats have taken completely over Mecklenburg County's Board of Commission. So, all of the county commissioners for Mecklenburg County, which Charlotte is a part of,
okay,
they're all Democrats.
Okay.
Every last single one of them, all 9 seats, are Democrats. And I know a lot of Democrats are excited about that. That actually makes me kind of nervous because the system, as much as we hate it, it works better when everybody's not in the same party and you got to compromise and you got to push back and you got to figure out how to make things work. The other party is, you know, one of the benefits of having a multi-party system is that the other parties can keep the one party from going too far. And so with an all Democratic county commissioner board, you know, I worry about how far will they go. You know, they got $1.7 billion of budget to distribute out into this, that, and the third. How far, you know what I'm saying? How far are they gonna push things? How far are they gonna take things without any pushback or any real, you know, opposing ideology, even on the board with them, to have any sort of behind closed doors discussions. So that's going to be interesting. Voters voted to lower the state income tax from 10% to 7%, the maximum anyways. So I thought that was interesting because I don't understand why people give other people the right to vote on taxes. Nobody's ever going to be like, yeah, I don't want to keep more of my money in my pocket. Like, that's never going to happen.
The poor are always going to lose income taxes, no matter how you do that. Like, I'm sorry. That's just how it's going to happen.
Well, for me, like, I voted not to lower the state income tax. And the reason I did that is because I understand, this is my perspective, but I understand that taxes pay for things. They pay for public schools. They pay for roads. They pay for various things that we utilize throughout our daily lives without even thinking about it. And when you reduce taxes, you reduce the government's income, and you reduce the government's ability to pay for and subsidize all those things we like to utilize. So on the one hand, we can't be like, the government need to put more money in the schools, and then on the other hand, be like, I want to pay less in taxes because your tax dollars go to the school. So I voted against it, and it was a Republican initiative. The local Democrats didn't want to go through with it because they understood that from their perspective, a perspective that I agree with, that it would hurt the state's ability to respond to crisis, to fund schools, to do all of those things that people love. So that was interesting. But the only other final thing here that I would say about our local elections is that we lived in a state that had a Republican supermajority. And if you read the book, How Democrats Die, to show you how bad it was here in North Carolina, they used North Carolina's current government as an example of how bad it would be if Donald Trump broke democracy. So what they were essentially saying is democracy in North Carolina has been broken. And you had a Republican supermajority in the House fighting against a governor that was a Democrat. And they was just kicking his ass all up and down the political spectrum. I mean, they would pass laws, he would veto it, they would override the veto. They were passing laws to restrict his power. They were passing laws taking things that are traditionally governor roles out of the governor's hands. They were doing all kinds of crazy things. The interesting thing, you know, there was actually an amendment in the voting that tried to take even more power away from the government. Now, that, or from the governor, that amendment was defeated. It didn't pass, but it was just, it was bad. So now that they've lost their supermajority, maybe we'll see some semblance of normal government operations. But, you know, then again, probably not. So it was an interesting race here. The Democrats definitely won big. There are a lot of new changes. Most
you all didn't.
I don't agree with, but they're there.
You all didn't have a governor's race?
No, we didn't. Not this go around.
Yeah. So, but with that being said, though, like we said, here, especially in Florida and Georgia, the two states, the recounting is still going on. Because now they found 70,000 uncounted ballots in Broward County, like for Fort Lauderdale area. That's where they found those. They found ballots in closets and all that. There's a lot of bullshit that's going on both Florida and Georgia, stuff like that. But it's interesting. It's interesting at least because Florida, like, people are saying that this race in particular is, you know, people are cheating. And I'm not saying people not cheat, but Florida always has elections like this. And you can see the people who are ignorant of the history of the elections in Florida because this is how Florida votes. Florida is called the ultimate swing state for a reason. Like, some bullshit gonna happen in Florida. Always. But one thing about Florida is I don't think people realize it's more racist white people in Florida or people who subscribe to white supremacy in Florida than people who don't. And from the panhandle on down to South Florida, on down to Miami, like, yes, from Orlando up, this is the South. And from Orlando down, that's like Florida that you see on TV. But Florida as a whole, it's a very, 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 very racist state. So, you know, you got to commend Andrew Gilliam's campaign, period, for even being to this point. You know, with in such a racist state. He did better than I expected. So you do got to, because, like, the campaign was very, very, very strong. It didn't really appeal to, like, those other type of white people. But the campaign was strong. But finally get to this point, you know, you got to commend the campaign for that. But it's just, it's crazy now because that's where we are now is seeing what's up with the recount, seeing what happened. I know they were asking for people to come and be a part of the recount. I don't know if it's going to actually help change the outcome, but. You know, they are here. This is where they are. Donald Trump is mad. You know, he's been throwing insults at Gilliam, and I don't see why. Well, I do see why, because, you know, if I was Gilliam, I'd have been asked Trump for them hands by now. He ain't going to keep talking shit to me like that. I'd have been told you, fuck you, crack. But that's just me. That's why I don't run for stuff like that. But it's very, very, it's just very interesting to be in these times.
You know, they, and if history is any guide, it is extremely exceptionally, matter of fact, thinking about it, I can't think of a single instance where a recount actually turned around the election. Usually, the guy that wins the initial count, or the gal, the person that wins the initial count, wins the recount. So, if history has any guide, Gilliam, and I think Gilliam might know that. I think that's why he already conceded.
Well, no, he took away his concession. He took that away.
Well,
because he conceded election night when the old results came in, but as more information about the recount and other things came in, that's when he took the concession away. That was just like a couple of days ago as well.
I think the numbers are in automatic recount territory anyway, so it wouldn't even matter if he pulled back his concession or not. I think, because I know, like, in Georgia, they're in automatic recount territory as it is, but Georgia has a runoff clause. I don't know that Florida has one, but it's going to be interesting to see how it unfolds. But you make good points about the racism of Florida. I don't view Florida as a true swing state in terms of anybody could get it. Especially when it comes to governor's races.
Well, they view it as they view it as the swing state because the race is close every year, not because, you know, it could go either way, but because the race is close either way, because we haven't had a Democratic governor since Crist.
Well, and even Crist was a Republican.
He was?
Yeah.
Okay, I fucked that up then.
Nah, he was a Republican. That he went independent, I think, during his second term as governor. I think. Hold on, I'm looking it up right now, matter of fact. So, right. So I'm right. So he was a Republican before 2010. He became an independent as a governor in 2011, I think it was. And then he became a Democrat, because he's a Democrat now, I believe.
Oh, so he getting in where he can fit in, huh?
Well, I think that speaks, and we could do a whole show about that, but that speaks to the radicalization of the Republican Party over the years. A lot of the old school Republicans are like, yo, I don't recognize this party. And so there, a lot of the old school Republicans are jumping ship. And so that's why you have so many of them retiring this go around to make way for the blue wave. Ooh, 40 Republican congressmen that just straight up retired, just not seeking new elections. But the Florida race, especially, so that's why, like what you said was 100% accurate. Races in Florida are always close, but they usually always land on the side of Republicans. That's why I said, to me, it's not a true swing state. I talked about this during my show, Lessons from the Screen. Of the 45 governors, well, 45 governors since the 46th ain't been elected yet, technically. Of the 45 governors elected to Florida, less than 10 of them have been liberal. All of the rest have been conservative. It's a red state with deep red ties.
Oh, yeah.
So you're right.
This is the deep South. I keep telling people, this is the deep South, no matter what you see on TV.
And you're 100% right. Gilliam, however you feel about him, has to get credit for being this close with the campaign he ran, because from my perspective, his campaign was designed to lose. Bad.
Why you say that?
He didn't lose bad.
Why you say it was designed to lose?
Why do I say?
Yeah.
Because he ran a pure liberal campaign in the red state. Pure, unabashed, unadulterated Democratic campaign. Just pure liberal blah. Like, there was no conservative appeal to his campaign whatsoever. Not a lick. He was basically like, I'm a liberal and I'm damn proud of it. Fuck you if you don't like it. And to run a campaign like that in a red state, it should not be close. But the fact that it was close speaks to his timing and his political acumen. It also speaks to his marketability and his publicity, his ability to capitalize off of the idiocy of his opponent. And it also speaks to the disillusionment that people are feeling towards the current Republican Party.
But, you know, even to that, what you just said, the idiocy of his opponent, I've been telling people for the longest, yes, DeSantis is a fuckface. Yes, he's stupid. But he ain't fucking retarded. So when he came out and he said, I hope Gilliam don't monkey this up, he knew what the hell he was doing. Like, that's the first call to the racist crackers to, hey, man, y'all wake up and y'all bring y'all asses out and vote for me.
Right.
Because we here now, and I'm going to keep talking to y'all while Gilliam try to talk to everybody. Fuck that, I'm talking to y'all. I only need y'all. Like, DeSantis didn't need black people voting for him. 18% of black women that voted for DeSantis, they voted for him because they probably voted in their interests, against him, whatever. But he didn't need their votes.
Well, that's one of the things we got to understand, what you just said. Nobody talks to black folk. One, the Republicans feel like they can't get our vote, and they're not trying because they don't need our vote. And the Democrats know that they have our vote.
They talk to everybody.
They do. But when it's time to get specific, they're talking to LGBT, and they're talking to Hispanics by immigration.
Yeah. Yeah, well, everybody don't include us, though. You know
right.
That, though, right?
Because everybody already know the way black people are going to vote. And I'm not saying that means that black people need to vote Republicans just to change shit up. No. What I'm saying is we need to vote to our interests. And if that means that we can make a deal with a Republican, then we make a deal with a Republican to get what we need. If we can make a deal with a Democrat, we make a deal with a Democrat. If we can make a deal with a libertarian or a socialist or whatever, make a deal with whoever we got to make a deal with to get what we need and move forward. But we definitely got to stop. We got to stop being so easy to predict, and we got to stop getting excited over nonsense. Like we talked about this last week. Like you just said, DeSantis wasn't talking to us. He wasn't. And honestly, Gilliam wasn't talking to white conservatives.
Right, but still, like I said earlier, there's no quid pro quo even with Gilliam. Like, even though somebody can go knock on Andrew Gilliam's door, like right now, can go knock on his door right now, there's still no quid pro quo at all. Like, I have dealings with people in the community I work. I do stuff with people in the community who are his friends. And even with those folks, there still is no quid pro quo. Everybody's just excited, like we talked earlier. The mindset is, black people, we got to have a seat at the table. We got to have a seat at the table. We got to have a seat at the table. We've had a seat at the table since 100 years outside of slavery. Am I correct or am I wrong? Mm-hmm.
Hell,
so,
not even that far. We've had a seat at the table since 20 or 30 years outside of slavery.
So
black people were winning political office positions in the 1880s and 1890s.
Right, but it was a boom, like right before Reconstruction. It was a political boom of black people being elected to a whole bunch of positions and things.
Right.
So Black people getting elected to positions is nothing new. Black people achieving high offices and high positions, from a historian telling you this, is nothing new. Right? So having a seat at the table is not enough. When you get to the table, what's your leverage at the table? And hell, you know what would be good leverage? Sitting at somebody else's table? If you could say fuck you and go back to your table. But we don't, that we don't want to do when it comes to politics. That we don't want to do. So we got to play this game. But even in playing this game, there's no quid pro quo. Like I'm just using Gillum as the example because, like I said, I know people who deal. I can see dude whenever. Nobody in this community has ever, and I've been telling people we got to hold people accountable. Nobody wants to, you know, put things together to where we like. We got all these votes, but we ain't going to give you these votes unless you give us this. And we ain't being nice about it. We got these votes. This is what we want. What you going to do? And if you can't deliver, then we ain't messing with you. And if you can't deliver, here it is. So, I mean, because like I say, like I'm looking at our local elections, right? So, of course, we're waiting to see what happened with Nelson and with the Senate and the governor race. We're waiting to see what happened to that. We got a new mayor. We got a guy named John Daly who replaced Gilliam as mayor. And Gilliam's chief of staff, Dustin Daniels, was the opponent of John Daly. So in District 1 City Commissioner, we got Bill Proctor retained his seat. So he's going to be in there for a longer time. I ain't got no problem with Proctor. I did think we needed new blood, but I ain't had no problem with Proctor. Proctor, out of all the politicians, Proctor at least is the one who speaks up. Nobody else can really say that. City Commissioner, seat 3 and seat 5, got a guy named Jeremy Matlow, who was a community guy and went to Rickards High School, owns Gaines Street Pies. So we got people, you know, we got a little background on him. Same with the lady Diane Williams Cox. Community person, seen her out in the community, don't really have no problem with her. District 1 school board, got a guy named Alvin Stripling who won. District 3 school board, we had a guy named Darrell Jones who won that. Leon County Charter County Code of Ethics, that was approved. Tallahassee Charter City Ethics Board vacancy was approved to fill that seat. And then, you know, they voted to end dog racing, so the dog track JC Casey is going away. People gonna lose jobs, but you know, dogs and stuff. like I said, so they're getting rid of vaping. You can't be vaping in place no more. They gonna change that. We got new agriculture people, attorney general and stuff like that. So no, just a little quick little overview of things that happen in Tallahassee. So some people are happy, some people are not. But because you know, especially when you get to the debate of voting versus non-voting, right? To me, the local, like we've already said, local voting matters. Like your local voting, if you don't vote no other time, at least vote local. Like I'm good with you. Just vote local because that shit count. Like you can affect local voting, especially if you're in a medium size, even in a large town. You can still affect certain things because stuff get broken up in districts and stuff like that. So you can make have an impact on things with local voting. Now, if you're a person who's skeptical about voting, I'm not pressed if you don't vote. I'm not pressed if you do vote. At the end of the day, what the fuck are you doing to make the community better? That's where I'm at. What about you? I know I talked a lot, but my bad.
No, I mean, but it is what it is. Like, you know, I agree with you. Voting is a piece of the political puzzle. It's not the biggest piece. It's not even the most important piece, because I think they're all equally important. And with that, you know, I say just because you voted doesn't mean you've done your part. There are a lot of other parts that need to be done. So voting locally is definitely important. Understanding the way your local government works is paramount to effective local voting and effective, you know, being involved in local politics effectively. All of that definitely comes into play. But I don't really get too caught up on whether or not you voted. You know, if you did vote, great. If you didn't vote, that's great too. We need people that are going to be out in the community doing work. We need people that are going to be just as judicious with their dollars as they allegedly are with their ballots. We need people that are going to be educating the next generation on civics and how government works. You know, like, we need activists, real activists with the historical component. We need real advocates. And doing all of those things is just as important as voting. So that's kind of where I am at it in terms of what's important and what's not when it comes to voting. Local voting, I agree, is vastly more important than national elections, federal elections. But federal elections are still important as well. And you want to make sure that you know what's going on the federal level. And that's something that should be particularly easy for all of us to talk about because it all affects us all the same way. So.
Yeah. But, I mean, the civics part is, now is the time to start teaching civics. Even though we're still late, but now is the time. Now is the time to start determining who going to run and who's not going to run and see if you can start getting behind and getting your campaigns and stuff together. Now is the time to start, like right now, start now. Don't wait till 2019. Don't wait till 2020 because, you know, coming up next is the presidential elections and things and other things that to get passed. But now is the time to start, like, get organized. If you want to do block voting, go ahead and start getting your block together now. Don't wait. Do it now. Learn as much as you can now. See things that could potentially be on the ballot now. Because if you don't, you're going to be behind. And it's like I said earlier, like you have a group of people who are like, voting matters. Vote, 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 vote. But their energy and ideas and concepts only go to voting. And it's nothing else, and it's nothing to empower the vote either. That's the thing that pissed me off too. Is our votes would be so much more powerful and have so much more weight and accountability if we had that quid pro quo mentality to voting. But it's just like, I believe in this dude, so I'm gonna put this dude in. It's like, man. Just because you know a politician, don't make that person not a politician. Don't mean I'm supposed to just trust you off what you say. Anybody out here who just trusted politicians based off of what they say, you owe me $1,000. Remember, you told me he's going to give me $1,000 next time you heard my voice. Well, you owe me $1,000. Because, hell, obviously you believe anything anybody says. A politician is supposed to sell you dreams. That's what they're supposed to do. But I keep telling people, it's not about what a person says when it comes to politics. It's about what they do. And these motherfuckers ain't doing a lot. Our communities are hurting. Everybody knows that. Everybody, all these people from these poor communities, whether you're black or not, you see your communities hurting. You see sides of your town flourishing. You see sides of your town hurting. You see sides of your town flourishing. You see sides of your town being gentrified. So how is your vote going to be more powerful? If you believe in voting wholeheartedly, believe in empowering your vote. If you don't believe in voting wholeheartedly, believe in getting your ass up and empowering your community. If you're a person who don't vote, I should see your ass in the community all the time. And just because you vote don't mean you're not special because you're every 2 year goddamn activist. You don't get no credit for being an every 2 year activist. And matter of fact, voting don't make you a damn activist. I better see your ass in the goddamn community. And if I don't, it's a problem. And all you politicians who either won or didn't win those races that you were in, if I don't see your ass in the community with that same energy, that same effort your ass had for the last 2, 3, 4, 5 months, I'm calling you out by name. Don't care who you are, because we ain't got no time for that bullshit in our community. If you're going to be in the community fighting to make it better, be in the community fighting to make it better 24/7, 365. Don't just do it when you want us to do something for you, because if not, I got to call your asses out. And everybody who listening to this need to do that for the people in y'all city, because it's time for the bullshit to stop. But it's time to make sure that you hold people accountable. It's time to make sure that your community get better. But at the same time, if you're going to be that person in that position that's calling people out and looking for accountability, you better make sure you have your ass covered, dotting your ass and crossing your T's. And you better make sure you in your community. Because if you're not, that shit ain't going to hold up. You know what I'm saying? Man, study Claude Anderson. Y'all need to start studying Dr. Claude Anderson. You don't have to take everything he say, but he has some great concepts that can help with politics, though. Just study politics as a whole, period. But if you're looking for black, especially for the black folk, you're looking for black concepts, study Dr. Anderson. Who else they can study, Pat?
The list is endless. I mean,
give him like one or two names.
Dr. Amos Wilson, Dr. John Henry Clark. Those are the three that I always mention. Williams. I just forgot his first name. Dr. Williams, Choke Diop. The list is literally endless. Chancellor Williams is not to be confused with Dr. Williams, who I was referring to earlier. Dr. Yosef Ben Yakinen. You know, you can go down the list. Dr. Miriam Abi. The list is endless. There's a lot of them. There are a lot of scholars out there in the black community over the last, not even over the last 100, 200, 300 years. You know, you go back to Dr. Blyden over 100 years ago. You don't even have to go that far back, although that's still great information. You're talking about going back to the scholars of the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Like, so for those people that are like, what they know about what's going on nowadays, Dr. Amos Wilson was telling people to buy tap water before tap water, or buy bottled water, or to get into bottled water and selling bottled water before bottled water was a thing. So, you know, there are people out there. But on the whole, like you said, Joe, just research politics as a whole. Research it as a subject. You know, research all of it. Research government. And I ain't talking about that Scoop-Dee-Doo YouTube research. I'm talking about research how it works. Learn the difference between the Senate and the House of Representatives. Learn the difference between the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the judicial branch. Figure out why those differences are there, how they interact with each other. Figure out why the House is limited to 435 members. Figure out how the state get their representatives and how it's proportioned every 10 years based on the census. Figure out why that makes the next election one of the most important elections ever. You know, figure out all of this stuff. And then figure out how it all works together. Put it all together. And then you'll be set up to where you'll be able to maneuver in space, no matter what the space is in America. But we can't even have these conversations about, you know, and in my show I broke down that some of the differences between the Senate and the House, because you have to break those down in order to talk about what it means to have a Congress that's divided, with the lower house being Democratic and the upper house being Republican. You know, but to me, one of the biggest takeaways for this election itself has been, or one of the more significant takeaways, and we got to mention Jordan Davis's mom, Lucy McBath.
Oh, yeah. Georgia State. Yeah. What was the county? What was Arkansas or somewhere where 16 black women got into like the judicial system or something like that?
I can't recall, but that seems to be happening.
Yeah, but shout. Well, you know, you know, overall, still shout out to that, you know, something like that, because you got to, that's a better chance of less fuckery, I'm hoping. But, you know, overall, shout out to the places that needed real change and got what they needed, you know.
I will say this. The only thing I'm truly excited about in terms of the national results is Maxine Waters is going to be head the Financial Oversight Committee in the House. And that's huge, because that's the committee that oversees, they oversee financial operations. They oversee the Federal Reserve. They oversee the banking system, the economy. They oversee housing, insurance, securities and exchanges, the SEC, international finance. Like, that is an extremely powerful committee.
Yeah.
Just by the fact that it, if you strip out everything and just say that it provides oversight to the Federal Reserve and to the national monetary policy, that alone makes it one of the most powerful committees in the government. But when you add in all of the other things it does, you know, with the banking system in general, with housing, with insurance, with investments and securities exchanges, and a black woman is at the head of that, and not just any old Rudy Poop black woman. Maxine Waters has a reputation for being a bit rowdy.
Right.
So I said it on my show, I'll say it again here. That's something that I'm very interested in. Dare I say a tad bit optimistic about what she might be able to do in that position, because that's a powerful position.
Right. Yeah, so I pulled this one up to 17 African-American women holding. They're in the Houston courts in a specific county in the Houston area. So they belong in the judicial system. So shout out to Maxine. Hold on, where my man in the little shirt? So he can give a shout out to Maxine Waters. Come on now, act right now. Shout out to Maxine Waters and all the other people who got good positions and shit. You know what I'm saying? Because, and to me, though, you know, even, like, I understand why people don't vote, and I understand why people vote. So I still like to show love for things that have happened, that can make change, that are significant changes, but also still understand that doesn't mean we won. Because those 17 women, they can make change. It's a better climate to make change, but change still has to be made before we can get to a point where we actually want to really celebrate like we want to. Because until we start to see real wins, we don't celebrate. That needs to be our mindset. We only celebrating real wins. And I'm not saying this ain't no more. This is a moral victory or something. But when we start to see the effects of it, that's when we know we got real change. Not just having people in the positions, but make sure that the people in the positions are making real change to make our community better.
Right.
But shout out to them.
Most definitely.
So, I mean, you know, now we're waiting to see what's going on with the recounts in Florida and Georgia. So that's where we are in the political realm now. You know, the House is blue, Senate is red. It is what it is, man. Election 2018. And if you, let me say this too. If you are a person who did vote, sit your ass down and get off your pedestal. Don't nobody give a shit. That don't make you special. And if you didn't vote, that don't make your ass no more pro-black than the next person. Shut the fuck up. Both sides need to shut the fuck up. Hey, guess what? Both sides, guess what? That's what all our black ass is still doing. Losing together. Whether you're a Democrat, Republican, whether you voted or you didn't vote, whether you're conscious, whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, whether you live in the woods, whatever, whether you're Hebrew Israelite, your ass is black and our asses is losing. So what the fuck you gonna do about that?
Nothing, cause you're losing worse than me.
Shit, I got mine. Which you better get yours. I got mine.
I have my 20-10-10.
Hey, you know, better get on the 10-9-9 like the one young lady. You want to make your vote more powerful? Become a person who receive a 1099 versus a W-2. have some power, but you still got to be more than a business owner though. Can't just be if you still get fucked over with a city full of business owners. Got to be more than a business owner. You got to be able to have influence with that business and be able to make change and have the economic using your economics to help with the voting.
Well, let me say this with regards to that. I know a lot of black people feel like they vote don't count because they ain't got the money and this, that, and the third. Look.
Now your vote counts.
What do you think they use that money for? They use that money to buy votes because they know silly people don't research the policies of a candidate. They know that silly people vote based off of who they recognize. Oh, I recognize his name for the TV.
Yep.
They that's the whole thing with advertising. They're literally advertising to you as if they're selling you a product. And they are selling you a product. So if we did our own research, that's how you negate dark money in politics. That's how you destroy all of these campaign finance things. You create an educated electorate that knows where to go to find candidates and knows how to critically think about the history of a candidate's voting behavior, and they tailor their voting to match the behaviors of the candidates they want to see. If you start getting people that are going to vote based on policy, that aren't going to vote based off name recognition and contextual information, when you start taking away a politician's ability to buy votes and come up with these formulas for how much money they need to spend to convert an independent voter to a voter for them, when you start doing away with all of that, all the dark money in the world won't matter. It won't. Because you can't be swayed by political ads and all those other things. So at that point, they know the best thing they could do to get elected is put forth policies and viewpoints that agree with the constituency. So I understand black people feel some type of way. We feel like we're broke and we don't have the money to participate. But
we got the money to participate. Yeah.
And
contribute
and are used to buy votes.
But that's like you said, though. If you don't have the money, that's when your power comes in numbers. Power comes in numbers when you don't have the money. But and that's when you hit them with the quid pro quo. We got all these votes. What the hell you gonna do for us? Now, having money does help. But if your ass don't have no money, your power is the vote, because these motherfuckers, look, people, they, in order for a candidate to win, they have to have the most votes. I know a lot of you people think that, let's say if you got Trump and Hillary, who's running, and you go in and you vote for some third party person, I know you think that that vote automatically goes for Trump, which it doesn't. That means neither Trump nor Hillary get it, because guess what? Like I said earlier in the conversation, if an election happens and nobody shows up to vote, like nobody at all shows up to vote, they got to think of something different. They have to think of something different, because you can't, the process to put somebody in office, it didn't happen. So now you got to think of something different. How can we get somebody in office? So now you got to appeal to the people differently, right? So it's like the power is in the voting. The power is in the people. Quid pro quo. What do you
we know what you want. We know you want our vote. So what you going to do for us? How you going to make this happen? If you can't make this happen, fuck you and you wanting our vote. But if you're going to ride with us, we got you. That's what you do when you don't have money. Now, if you do have money, then you do that. Plus, you know, the money allows you accountability. It reinforces your accountability. I say that. That's what the money does. Reinforces your accountability. Hey, amen. We need to start teaching political class, so at DeVry. Yeah, man. But Godspeed moving forward in these elections. Hopefully we learn something new and do something new. Stop being a follower. Don't be a trendy voter. Don't be a fanatical voter. Don't be the voter who votes for everybody else who just riding the wave. Don't be afraid to go against the wave. Don't be afraid of that. Like, don't be afraid. Like, I'm not afraid of going against the wave. I didn't vote for a lot of people other people voted for. Why? Because they didn't have my best interest. If the motherfuckers don't have your best interest, they don't get your vote. And if people don't understand that, they can need to kiss your ass.
Word.
So there it is, man. You got any parting shots other than power to the people?
Power to the people other than...
There it is. There it is. Hey, man. He's Patrick. I'm Joseph. Hold on. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, remember y'all support our shows, our Freedom Train shows on Patreon. So you go to www.patreon.com/thefix to support the Fix Sports Podcast and www.patreon.com/LFTS. Lessons from the screen. There you go. Lessons from the screen. So LFTS. So we on Patreon. You all can. We would love to have you all support to help the shows and the network overall grow. But we can't do it without you. Because, hey, we here with you. And to get better, we need you. So please go support us. And any other check out our app on Google Play Store. Free, let's go type in Freedom Train Network. You can check out our free app. That way you get the download straight to the app. You get the notification. You don't have to go nowhere to look for the podcast. My upcoming book on the Shoulders of Giants, Volume 3, South America, is coming out soon. So for more information, make sure you visit www.ontheshoulders1.com. Follow me on Instagram, The Real Joseph Ward. Follow me on Twitter at JoeWard84. You want to holler at Pat? He on Facebook, Patrick Irvin. But other than that, you want to holler at Pat, holler at me, and I'll tell him. Ain't that right, Pat?
Word.
There it is. So, hey, man, from my hood to your hood, from my grandma to your grandma, from my granddaddy to your stepmom. Two fingers in the air like a player.
All right.